Today we're going to be reviewing the book entitled The New Doubting Thomas. The book is written by Jeremiah Kamara. Jeremiah, welcome to the Ink Spot with Stanley G. Robertson.
Thanks for having me.
You make a statement in the book, we have become a nation of hypocrites. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I don't think that our belief is commensurate to our, you know, our actions. We say one thing and do another thing. Black people are the most religious people on earth. We are the people that are the most committed to the idea of godly intervention. Our church services last longer than any other church service. There's many statistics that we can point to. But yet we're on the bottom, just about of every negative category. And the question is, if there are 85,000 predominantly black churches, why are we doing so bad? We could have 1,700 churches in every single state. And I just feel that we are religiously intoxicated. And every group, with the exception of blacks, can see this contradiction of being notoriously religious on one hand, but on the other hand, helplessly dependent upon other groups for our sustenance.
Now, what is the problem with being religious?
Well, there's not a problem there as long as you know, put it to practical usage and you can, you know, you have some empirical evidence to point to the productivity that your religion is supposed to, you know, produce. But if you're just religious for the sake of religious...
Okay, what type of productivity are you referring to? Now, most religious, in terms at least of Christianity, the purpose of the religion is to help people understand their connection to God, and it's a spiritual thing. What type of productivity are you talking about? You're talking about from an economic standpoint?
Well, I'm talking about from any health, economic, any type of what you would call productivity. See, the church has conditioned blacks to seek supernatural fixes. And I understand it's supposed to be about spirituality and all that stuff, but in the real world, the church has conditioned blacks to seek supernatural fixes instead of using intellectual and analytical approaches for dealing with critical issues. We've been conditioned to walk by faith and not by sight. And when you do that, you know, walking by faith and uncompromising religious loyalty, this has primed the black collective to be gullible and exploitable and vulnerable. And we see this mindset taking place in our community, where you see non-blacks exploiting blacks without the slightest resistance and controlling the resources and selling the goods and services inside of every black community in the midst of an abundance of black churches. So how can you have a church on every single corner, and yet on every single corner there are non-blacks controlling the resources and selling us goods and services? There is a disconnect, obviously, between what we are supposed to be hearing in church and what we are, you know, our behavior on the outside.
Right, and that's the issue. So in your opinion, what we are supposed to be hearing in church is something that's going to advance the community from an economic and social perspective.
Well, of course, I mean, because, you know, there's a lot of preaching. You know, we had this thing, you know, back in the day, we still kind of hold this tradition here, where you'd have a preacher that come in and want to do that, and they would say, nah, he's got the learning, but he ain't got the burning. We want the entertaining preachers. We want the shouting. We want the sweat. We want to feel like we've been to church. And this is why, you know, all, you know, leaders around the world, especially Karl Marx, when he said religious is the opiate of the masses, we feel good. We shout. And it makes us feel good. We get our Sunday fix. Even Dr. Martin Luther King called the church the Sunday habit. And it is habitual. And we're not really, you know, questioning what our preacher is doing. The preacher is one of the few professions that can, you know, hold people at bay for hours without having to take any type of bar. You know, if you want to become a lawyer, you got to pass a bar. If you want to become an accountant or a tax specialist or whatever, you have to take a test, a doctor, whatever. But all a preacher has to do is say God called him, and he can get up there and hold you for hours and, you know, without any real knowledge of science.
Don't you think that, number one, it's up to the individual if they want to sit underneath the teaching of that particular preacher? And number two, we have a lot of preachers, especially now in today's age, that are in fact going for degrees in divinity and other sorts of educational level degrees.
Well, I mean, that's true to some extent, but, you know, for the most part, we are basically appealing, you know, to tradition. I don't think that, you know, most people really question their preacher's level of knowledge. They trust, it's more of a trust. And, you know, we are so intoxicated with this trust that it's almost a mental impairment. You know, the obvious things kind of escape us. And, obviously, you know, things in terms of our behavior and our status on the outside of church is definitely not commensurate, you know, for what, you know, what we're hearing on the inside of the church. So there's a disconnect here, and I just think that people are afraid to question it. We can't just appeal to tradition. You know, my mama was doing this, and therefore I'm doing it. No, we've got to think. We've got to grow. We have to evolve. And there's just not a lot of evolution taking place in the black church.
What do you think about the Bible? Now, in the book, you talk about the Bible quite a bit, and you throw out some good research, some good information in relation to the stories in the Bible, the genesis of the Bible. Now, are you making the statement that the Bible is a fallacy? It's an untruth. In other words, the Bible is bogus.
Well, I would say much of it is. You know, we don't, you know, a lot of us look to the Bible in terms of our morality. And we were moral before the Bible. You know, this is the 16th. There's been many Bibles, but the one that we're most familiar with is the King James Bible. This is the 400th year anniversary of the King James Bible. And when you read the Bible, which most of us haven't, we have to, you know, we can't be disingenuous and claim that we've read the Bible. Most of us sit and up in church. We allow our preachers to pick and choose what passages to deliver us on a particular Sunday. But when you look at it, you know, it is fallacious. It is a book, a retelling of pre-existing myths and legends. And we don't get our morality from that. The Bible did not come along and teach and invent love and invent truth and invent morality. Those things were in place long before this book. You have to know the motivation behind why the Bible was created, which I outlined in my book. You have to know the reasons why, how we arrived at where we are in terms of our religious faith. Most people don't take it that seriously. We just trust if we, you know, mama did it, then we did it. You know, grandma did it, then we did it. But if you look at the Bible, you know, and especially you read the Old Testament, it's one of the most bloodiest, immoral books ever written. The killing, capital punishment takes place, you know, for just about any offense. There are very few pages in the Old Testament that don't allude to some type of blood or gore or use words like destroy and hate and evil and wicked. It is a very, very evil book. And for those who think that God is love, I'm just trying to figure out what book are you reading?
And so, this wait a minute, are you saying that God is not love?
Well, see, when we say God, first, you know, that you're taking the presumption that there is a monotheistic being.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. So let's talk about
that. Let's not take that. The only reason why we are a monotheistic society, first of all, is because monotheism was introduced
world. You're using the word monotheism. Go ahead and tell us what that means.
It's just the belief in a singular deity, a singular being, an omniscient, omnipotent being. And our concept of a monotheistic being was something that was introduced to the world. The world, as far back as time goes, was on a polytheistic construct, which means many gods. And Akhenaten of ancient Egypt introduced monotheism, and we adapted it, and we have it popularized. It doesn't mean that it's true. It doesn't mean that it's right or real.
Do you believe it's true?
Well, I don't subscribe to a particular being that's in control and pushing our buttons and governing us like that. No, in India you have 300 million gods. When people say, "Do you believe in God?" my first question is, "Which one?" There are many. Now, if you say that there's only one God, that's according to your teaching. And the only reason why we even having this conversation today is because we live in America. So, of course, in America, this is a Christian, primarily a Christian society, which subscribes to monotheism. But we can't necessarily take that presumption. When we look at the of the Bible, we say that, you know, especially when we go to Genesis, I mean, the first couple of chapters of Genesis is a biological, cosmological, and geological mess. It's a train wreck. And you know, we have to get with that. We have to realize that a lot of those things are erroneous, and we can't be afraid to question it. A lot of us are going to church because we're afraid not to. There's not a lot of real knowledge going on in the church. There's just a lot of belief. And you can believe something and have faith. That doesn't require thought. It doesn't require intelligence. It doesn't require anything except, you know, blind loyalty. And that's something I'm thinking that we need to get out of.
The book is called The New Doubting Thomas. What is it that you want us to take away from the book?
I want us to learn. I want us to grow. I want us to be more than what we are. I want us to go beyond blind belief. I want us to research. I want us to ask questions. One thing that we do know without question, without exception, do your research on that. Jeremiah Kamara is not making this up. The more religious a country, the lower the IQ of that country. The less religious, and that is because people who are more religious rely more on the supernatural as a means to solving their problems than their own intellectual capacity. That
right,
is
right,
without
but that doesn't,
anywhere
that,
around the
that's
world.
Not necessarily a cause and effect. In other words,
no.
it's not necessary that the reason why people who are more religious, their IQ is less because they're more religious.
No, it just means that people have, you know, there are some people who choose to, you know, question things. There are some people who choose to do research. You know, for instance, there is not really even it's funny because even when you look at the Vatican, which are, you know, pretty much sometimes the last people to come along because they want to maintain this, you know, facade of holiness, and it's really just about, you know, European imperialism. But when you look at the Vatican, even they had to, you know, come on board with evolution. Now, if you're talking about a creator, and you're talking about, you know, you look at Genesis, like I said, it is a geological mess. It is a cosmological and biological train wreck. Now, when you look at Genesis, there is really not a single serious scientist that is going to dismiss evolution. And even the Catholic Church had to come on board with that.
Even with evolution, I mean, is evolution inconsistent with the Bible?
Well, of course it is, because if you look at the Bible, Genesis is going to tell you the world is just a few thousand years old, you know, six at the most. You've got Asians who've been cultivating rice for 8,000 years. I mean, you can go to the Grand Canyon and just, you know, that once was a river. You can just dismiss that. But the first thing that people want to do, they want to say, well, I didn't come from no monkeys. That's not what evolution says.
Right. We know evolution is not necessarily that we evolved from monkeys. But
but that's the common belief. I didn't come from the. Let me say this. It says, lean not unto your own understanding. Now, when you say that, what you're doing is, and there's a reason why that was there, that was put in the Bible. Like I said, you have to know the motivation behind these things. But when you suggest that a person lean not into their own understanding, what you are doing, you are encouraging that person to underutilize one of the most important organs in their body, and that's their brain, which is ironic because you would not suggest that we underutilize any other organ in our body, such as our liver, our skin, our kidneys, our heart, or whatever. In fact, you would encourage a person to quit smoking so they can fully utilize to the fullest potential, the capacity of their lungs.
Okay, let's go back to Dorothy. Dorothy, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, your question or comment?
My comment is, where in the world has Jeremiah, that's his name, I believe,
that's right.
I was told, has he come from? I happen to, without a shadow of a doubt, know that there is a God. Evidently, the Holy Spirit has never touched his life. He has no connection whatsoever. And the Bible tells us at such a time as this when we will have people who are doing exactly what he is doing right now.
Okay.
And in the name of the Lord God Almighty, there are proofs that the Bible is inspired by the Word of God and that it was written by man. It's wonderfully unity. Over 40 authors wrote 66 books in different lands all over for a period of 1,800 years. Many never saw each other's writings, and yet there is no contradiction between any of the two of them. Collect any other group of books by any other 40 men and any subject and see if they agree.
Well, Dorothy, you are wonderful. Thank you for your phone call. Jeremiah, you want to respond to that real quick? You got a couple of more phone calls. Jeremiah, what do you say?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a very familiar argument. You know, again, that's a certain, the Bible tells us. See, that's the premise. That's, you're starting from the wrong print. We're assuming the Bible to be true. You're assuming the thing to be true that you are trying to prove or disprove. Nobody said that there wasn't, you know, a God or this or that. We're not even, you know, discussing that. We're talking about the validity of the Bible. In fact, the 31 cities that Joshua allegedly conquered, even their own scholars such as Israel Finkelstein, that teaches in Tel Aviv, and Lawrence Schiffman, the leading Hebrew scholar in Tel Aviv, will tell you those cities never existed. They will tell you, just have to believe it.
Okay.
There is no, let me finish this.
Okay,
there is no, absolutely no archaeological evidence of any Abraham ever existing, any Moses ever existing, any Jesus ever existing. And she talked about how the stories match up. Of course they match up, because if you don't know, understand typology, and you've read the book, you have to know what type, the style of writing of typology at the time that the Bible was written. They can look at the story. It's nothing but a to be continued. They can look at it. They call it prefiguring. They can look at some of the characters in the Old Testament and prefigure them into the New Testament to line them up, to match them up, to give them some type of continuity. That was the style of writing at the time. But because we don't know that, and we only believe what the Bible tells us, then it puts us in a quagmire, and there's an African proverb that says the pot will stink of what's in it. As far as our productivity, we are stinking. So that means there is something in us, and a lot of that which is within us is false teachings and just erroneous fallaciousness that is coming directly out of our black churches.
Okay, Jeremiah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Jeremiah Kamara about his book, The New Doubting Thomas, and we are at the round table with Reverend Stephen Thurston II and Bonita Jackson. Reverend Thurston, what do you think about the book?
From the perspective of me going to school, having a master's degree in theology, I liked some of the aspects of the book. I like his challenge that we become a thinking people, that we do our research, we do our background. He did some good research. What he's saying is a lot of it is authentic as it relates to the construction of the canon, the 66 books. And again, you got to go to church history class to get an understanding of all that went on behind the scenes. However, I believe what I believe, and I believe that his book is based upon a lot of illogical fallacies. And that's the main issue that I have with the book. It's built upon illogical fallacies, and it doesn't really follow through. Good information is dropped out here and there. He challenges us to become critical thinkers, but there's no real solid endpoint to the book. As you ask him the question, what are we to leave from this book with? And I got no answer from him there. I got no answer when I read the book.
Bonita, what do you think?
I didn't care for the book at all because it goes against everything that I believe. So he is correct in saying that we're grown up in the church and we're taught to have faith and we're taught to go to church on a weekly basis. So that's what I was taught and that's what I believe and that's how I live and that's how I make it through the day. So he's basically telling me to turn away from all that hope you have and go to this. And it was just pretty disappointing. I did appreciate the fact that he did some research. So now I have to come back and I have to do research for myself and try to find out what he's talking about and prove the Bible to be true. He's so busy trying to prove the Bible is not true. Well, what is true? So you're saying the work that you are saying about Flavius, is his work true and the Bible is untrue? So he's not coming forth with what he actually believes. He's telling me he doesn't believe the Bible, but what do you believe?
I like the book. I did appreciate the book, and I thought that the book was challenging. In other words, it challenged us to use our minds and our brains and to think and don't just be followers in, and I'm not talking about necessarily followers of Jesus or
right.
God. I'm talking about followers of the minister in the pulpit. We need to know for ourselves. I mean,
definitely.
We have been lulled into some sort of sense of whatever he says goes, and that's not the case. One of the things that the author said in the book, he talked about, for example, giving tithes, giving your money to the church, and how some people, they'll give the money to the church, and then they'll make the comment that once I give my money, I don't care what they do with the money. Now, I've heard that comment myself, and I have a problem with that. What do you think about that, Benita?
I don't agree with that comment. I've heard it before, too. But I don't agree with it. I never have. The church needs to be accountable for what they do. If your church members are paying their tithes on a weekly basis or however often, the light shouldn't be cut off. There should be toilet paper in the bathrooms, and there should be some sort of accountability for those funds.
Okay, and I presume you...
Definitely. Accountability has to be in place. It has to be in order. And I think we also have to understand that there has been a changing of the guard. Things have evolved in the church. We're looking at different generations. There was a generation, my great-grandmother may have said, made that statement, I don't care what they do, but we're living in a different day, different era, different age, where people are holding the church more accountable.
One of the things that the author also talked about in the book was this idea of sort of following in blind belief. He gave us this story. He talked about this scientist who had done a study, and he did the study on some geese. He divided the geese into two groups. One of the groups was hatched by the mother. One of the groups in an incubator. The group that was hatched by the mother opened the group. The group of geese then hatched, followed the mother once they saw the mother. The second group, who didn't have a mother, hatched from the incubator and started to follow the researcher because that's the first thing they saw moving. And the author is making the point that that's how we do. We follow in blind faith. It's just whatever we see moving, we follow that. Then he goes on to tell this story about the Eskimo. And he said the Eskimo made the comment, I don't know about God and sin. If I don't know about God and sin, would I go to hell? And the priest says, no, not if you don't know. And the Eskimo says, then why did you tell me? Now, I thought that was a great story, because the implication is that if we don't know about sin, then we're not going to go to hell. We're not accountable or responsible because we don't know. But if someone tells us, then all of a sudden we are subject to go to hell because now we know if we don't believe. I mean, do you see that as a problem or an issue?
I think that we all ought to be people. Human race is an evolving group, and we're all to be continuously learning, growing, and evolving. And so it's not the safe space to be in to say, I just don't want to hear about it. And so that gives me the safe room. No, we're all going to hear about it. We ought to learn. We ought to grow. We ought to develop. We ought to grow to become better human beings. And religion is a part of that process.
And see, Jeremiah, he uses the one quote where he says, where knowledge ends, faith begins. And I think that he was incorrect in that statement, because I believe that religion gives people the inspiration to continue to grow, to learn, and to gain additional knowledge.
We've only got a couple of minutes left on the show. I want to get, of course, a thumbs up or thumbs down from you guys on this book. But before we do that, I want you to give me a very short answer, like 10 seconds, to this question. Do you believe that the Bible should be taken literal? Benita, what do you think?
I think so, yes, because I've always believed in the Bible, and I believe it's true. And if you believe in God and him being perfect and everything about him is real and of love, then what is written is true.
Reverend Thurston.
I don't think that every aspect of the Bible should be taken literally.
We've been talking about the book, The New Doubting Thomas, by Jeremiah Kamara. We want to get a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the book. Reverend Thurston, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I'm going to give a thumbs down. Not just because I'm a pastor, not just because I'm a preacher, because I don't believe it reached a logical conclusion. It hit and missed too much for me.
Benita.
Thumbs down and then another thumbs down.
All right. I am going to give The New Doubting Thomas a thumbs up. I thought The Doubting Thomas delved into a lot of myths and motivations that we find in the Bible. The book was very controversial, but I thought that it did a good job in terms of getting the conversation moving. And from that point, from that standpoint, I thought it was good. I also thought that the book admonished worshipers to be educated, and that is a very critical factor in my mind.